نعم، السلام عليكم.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Benefit with Ayub and Redbeard. What's going on this evening?
Man, cooling, sitting here, you know, drinking a coffee.
Yeah.
Getting ready for another grueling work week.
Yeah, let me tell you
about.
How
about yourself?
I'm doing fine, man, but let me tell you about my coffee work week. So I already told you we were running short on coffee, so we used some of that Starbucks cold brew that we got. Instead of just making cold brew, we use it as hot coffee, right? So for me, just drinking straight black coffee, it ain't a thing, you know. Coffee soldier, right?
Right.
So my wife, on the other hand, she likes creamers and everything like that.
Right.
So
right.
So when we didn't get coffee, we didn't get creamer. So we rummaging through the cabinets and we come across this pumpkin spice flavored creamer that we have in there.
Right.
Yo, listen, pumpkin spice isn't meant for the hood. This stuff is just not where it's at, man.
I can't deal with that pumpkin at all.
Nah, man, it's like strong to the smell of it, and then the taste leaves a aftertaste, man.
It's not a good look with coffee.
Yeah, you know, I had to be like the test dummy, right? So I had to make the first cup, man. And listen, man, it's no upsides with that stuff, man.
What's funny is I can actually envision it too, and the reaction.
There's no upsides with that, man.
And a rant and a point by point breakdown on what was so wrong with it.
I'm telling you, man, like that stuff is bad, man. Like I'm just looking at the coffee. I done drank some of it, man, just to not be wasteful. But man, let me tell you, that's not where it's at, man. Pumpkin spice, no.
Oh, I've been here.
Pumpkin spice on this podcast, man.
I don't do that. I don't do the pumpkin spice latte, the pumpkin spice frappe. Anything with pumpkin in it, I'm cool.
I'm gone, man.
Yeah, I'm cool.
So, getting into this to the next episode, man, we wanted to touch on a subject that you and I had spoke about previously, and that's how on social media is used. It's like a platform to inseminate false ideas within our religion, right? And although you might find some of the most ludicrous stuff on the pages of the Muslims with regards to their weak understanding of Islam and the proper aqidah and the proper minhaj, but it wouldn't be far removed to think that behind some of these pages are like agents, like to be frank, man.
Yeah.
Those who attempt to infiltrate the ranks of the Muslims and to spread these false ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like I pointed out to you and excuse me, myself and a few other brothers have been getting requests or followers on Twitter, right? By these, they have to be bot pages, right? Because on your Twitter page, it shows when you started your account, right? So, not too long ago, I got a follow from this woman, and when I went to look at who she was, her page was started November. And it was still November of 2019 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going and investigating her page, all you see is articles about jihad, right? Jihad, 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 jihad. I'm from the top of her page to the bottom of her page. And so you go and you look at the people that she's following. She's only following Muslims and like these ultra conservative people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think that the page was just started in November, and within November, she has 100 or so followers that are all Muslims, right?
Right.
Because you know how social media is. Sometimes that if you follow somebody, they'll automatically follow you, right? Without investigating, like, who it is that they're letting on to their page. So I showed the brothers in the group that we're in, like, yo, look out for this woman. And lo and behold, this woman has sent a friend request to
each and every one of them.
Right. And also, and this was sometime this week.
Mm-hmm.
There was a brother who said that he actually worked for an undercover agency, whether it be the FBI or the CIA or whomever it was. He said he wouldn't name them. But he said that, you know, he was recruited by this agency to infiltrate the Muslims, and specifically the Salafi Muslims. And when you would scroll down his page further, you would see that he was right in the midst of the whole Salafi publication. And you know the kind of confusion and fanaticism that a lot of people have with regards to SP or SPUBS or Salafi Pub or whatever, right? And so you would go down his page and you would see that, you know, he's in the midst of arguing back and forth and using a lot of the jargon that the Muslims use who tend to affiliate themselves with this side. And as a side point, I'm not blaming Salafi publications in and of itself for this, but we know how the people are with regards to them, right? How they hold on tightly to them, and they tend to defend these people at all costs. And one of the downsides to that is just this, that it allows people to come within their ranks. And long as they are making the same types of chants that you're making, as long as they seem to be in accordance to what you're saying, then you automatically take those people as an advocate and a trustworthy friend without even vetting them, right? Now, for example, as a person who, and I'm not saying I have, I'm just using that as an example. As a person who's been in close proximity to an SP, maybe whether, you know, through lectures or knowing them personally, right? So if I know you personally and I feel that someone's coming at you unjustly, then without question, I'll defend you, right? Because I know what I've seen from you and what you're and what they are alleging of me. I don't see that from you. So quite naturally, I'll defend you, right? But in these social media realms where you don't know the person who you have on your friend list outside of looking at their posts, so there's no real way to gauge who these people are. But yet and still, because they're chanting the same chant that you chant, you take them as an ally, right? And then, like I say, this brother, he comes out later, and saying that he's actually deceived the Muslims, and he's given an apology, and he's saying he's no longer with them. And then the whole crux of the situation, the guy wasn't even a Muslim to begin with. That's the craziest part about this whole situation. And it brings me to what we're going to talk about tonight, because not only do we have these types of people who are infiltrating our Muslims, right? And as we, when we talked in our last talk, you have three fronts that you tend to see within the Muslims on social media, be it Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. You have three phases from what I've seen. You have number one, those who tend to want to put out trustworthy and beneficial posts, right? Where it's either posts from the Quran, hadith, or stands from the scholar, what they see, alhamdulillah, benefit the Muslims in what capacity they can through their social media platform. The second one that you see is you see those people of khuruj, those people who push that takfiri minhaj, call for the overthrow of the rulers and causing all types of corruption in the land through their keyboards. They're advocating for people to go out into these lands and fight this quote-unquote jihad, right? And oftentimes, the people who propagate this stuff the most be the most ignorant, right? For example, you have this one guy. I don't know if you ran across him on YouTube or Twitter, and he's big on Twitter, and he goes by the name of Brother Haji. And oftentimes you'll see him on YouTube where he's out in Hyatt Park or whatever it's called over there, and he's debating. And he oftentimes he tries to, or he does, he debates with the Rafida Shia. Now, and you have this facet of people, right? Whether they advocating for the guy, Ahmed Musa Jibril, who calls for the overthrowing of the leaders and making takfir of the leaders, or anybody from that elk, right? And then you have, thirdly, this strand of feminist Islam or feminist Muslims or whatever they tend to call themselves, right? So you have these three strands that you would see predominantly. Like me, for example, I try to curb all of that stuff from my page, and I only try to affiliate myself with those who have some sort of benefit, right? And who want to be righteous Muslims, Allahu A'lam. And that's how I try to keep my page, right? But we know how it is. You may befriend somebody who befriends one of these people, and then that filth that they have seeps onto your page, right? And so this is how we end up coming across some of this stuff. And one of the things that I've recently seen with regards to these feminist feminist Muslims, right? And I'm about to pull up from one of these women's pages, man. Just give me a second. And this is what you tend to see a lot of. And what we have to understand is that this stuff isn't haphazard, right? And we have to understand that there is an outside force that is pushing these type things along. So you have this one woman on Instagram, and she goes by the name, not on Instagram, but on Twitter. And she goes by the name of Islamist Feminist. And when you go on her page, you see all of these types of goofy type posts, right? And she has this one link, and it takes you to this page called Anarchist Islamist or something like this. And this is what she says, right? And this is just one of the people that we'll start off mentioning. So she has, as an anarchist and as a Muslim, I have witnessed troubled times as a result of extreme division that exists between these two identities and communities. To minimize these divisions, I argue for an anti-capitalist, anti-authoritarian Islam, an anarcho-Islam that disrupts the two commonly held beliefs. One, that Islam is necessarily authoritarian and capitalist, and two, that anarchism is necessarily anti-religious, right? And this is just one thing that she has amongst the other things. And then on her page, she has another link to this woman in Denmark. And this woman in Denmark, she opened up this all-women masjid, right? And let me pull this article up. And I'm going to just read you briefly some of what this woman says, and then we can get into our discussion about it. So let me find this article real quick. And these people, man, are, I have my thoughts on this. And when I pull this up, I'll So they have this site called Sayes, Sayes. And so the article says, meet the first woman imam who has started a mosque run entirely by women. And so this woman, she says, this woman says, she says, I have never felt at home in the existing mosque. The new grand mosques are unbelievably beautiful, but I have the feeling of being a stranger when I'm in there. Women who stand upon the balconies and look down on what's happening. Many women and young people don't even go into the mosque. As you enter into a male-dominated and patriarchal space in which a man has the floor, a man leads the prayer, men are the focus and dominant. That is why we are now setting up a mosque on women's terms. And this woman goes on to say that she's confident that this project will ease the barriers between traditional Islam and a more modern rendition of the faith that can better relate to young worshipers, right? And so now, listen, this is extremely important, right? On a number of levels, because first and foremost, we have to look at and define what is feminism in and of itself, right? Because like many of our ulama, what they do is before they have a discussion on a particular topic, they'll take the term and then they'll define it, right? And when we look at feminism, we find that first and foremost is a foreign concept to Islam, right? And then it has its intended audience, right? So let's look up what feminism is. And then this, we can go from there. So what the dictionary says, the advocacy of women's right on the basis of equality of the sexes, right? So that's the first thing, is what feminism basis is to set the stage where men and women are on equal footing, right? And then we know what Islam is. We know that within Islam, that the Muslims, the men and the women, in some regards, they do have equality. And then in other regards, men have a preference over women. In some regards, women have a preference over men. More than anything, we understand that this is these roles that are assigned to each individual are divinely legislated roles. This isn't just how one man woke up and felt that day and decided, like, this is how society is going to be run, right? So, this is where we would like to start the conversation at, with regards to this feminism that's seeping in because it's having a stronghold with Islam. And then after you make your comments, then we'll come back and tackle this thing.
Us might be walking around with expired Shahada cards, man. We might got an expired license to practice Islam. Real talk, man. If a person come into an issue, they'll go to Google, they'll go to Siri, they'll ask so and so. How many people say, I'm taking this job, but let me even see if this type of job is permissible. Let me research this. How many people of us really research our day-to-day life according to the Quran and the Sunnah? How many of us even invest in our education and really have a nice amount of resource book to get us through the day-by-day issues? I'm not talking about going all into the esoteric of whatever. rookie, you don't even have your shahada, or you don't even know if you are practicing or if you are offering your salat correctly. I'm talking about just the basic day-by-day stuff that can either bring you closer to Allah or take or move you further. And that's not a burden that can simply just be thrown on a man. Women have to do their most due diligence. They should have the same love for Islam as we do. If I got 1,000 books, at least have 20. Don't say that you've been Muslim for 20 years and all you have is the sirah of the Prophet, Yusuf Ali Quran, and a weird thicker book, one of the big floppy joints that don't really fit on your bookshelf, and it don't have where these thickers come from. You get what I'm saying? No, I'm like, for real. A lot of times, man, we be married to, and we be seeking marriage from ghosts. They just be having the cobs and gloves on. I remember my brother Kareem. He was saying that, man, Omar Quinn was having a little sidebar conversation with a group of brothers. And Omar Quinn said, man, sometimes you have to lift these sisters abaya, man, to make sure that their feet touching the ground, meaning that they might be jet.
No.
And sometimes sisters need to do that with the brothers, too. Because we hollow Muslims. We be having all the words. We like the frog. It look deep, and you dive into it, and you bust your head on concrete because it's nothing to sustain you.
Right?
It's empty calorie Muslims, man. We got herbal life Muslim.
Nah, but for real, that statement that Ibn Baz made about women being the whole of the society, right, should be something that women can grab hold of, man. And take like real pride in that, mm-hmm. right? I'm talking about real pride in that, because from you or from your household is going to come generations of uprightness. And from those generations, you solidify your hereafter, right? Because the examples that you set as a mother, you're not only a mother, but you're also a teacher. You're also an influence to your sons and, more importantly, your daughters, right? And that resonates back to you. Those aren't just empty things that you're doing, right? They have benefits in this life, and they have benefits in the hereafter as well. And so they should cling on to that. Sheikh Mohammed bin Hadi, Habibullah, he has a real short lecture that he did called The Woman is the Queen of Her House.
Yeah.
Right? These are actual queens. Right? You're just not a Muslim woman. You're a Muslim woman who's a queen and who has a responsibility. And you shall be weary of who you take your deen from and who you don't even, who even comes into your circumference to bring you this stuff. Because these ideals that we're talking about, we both know that they are foreign to Islam. They have no credence in the Quran or the Sunnah. None whatsoever. The terminology itself should be one that you look at with a raised eyebrow. What in the world is a feminist Muslim? Like, what is it?
A lot of times, and what opens the women up, lack of proper cultivation, lack of knowledge, and bad experiences dealing with and marriage. Those three will have a woman spiraling, looking for answers. And like I said, we got so distanced from Allah that our dua may not even reach the top of our kufis or kima.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm being honest, because when we read the stories of the Salaf, and I'm not even talking about the Prophet and the Sahabas, or the Tabi'in, or the Atabat Tabi'un. I'm talking about just the righteous imams that came. They had stories where people have offered du'as and was like, whoa, was getting, man, blessed. And the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was facilitating their affairs. That was, we don't see these type of things no more, man.
Right.
We don't see that no more. We don't see shining lights and real live goodness coming from our community. We so impoverished that doing bad is rich.
Right.
Doing bad is rich. We don't even know what part, like, we so, are we all so mesquite that mesquite look like richness to us? Oh, I got a white crispy throw of a koofy. I'm going to tilt that joint a little bit. I'm going to lean it back on my head. I got the prosh. I got the moose half. I'm going to put some sandals on. And people will, man, swear their mightiest oath to Allah about a person's goodness. We be having people dropped in our community. And, man, and the law knows best, but don't nobody know nothing about these people other than so-and-so said bring so-and-so. Like, oh, you got, oh, that's y'all imam now. What's his name? Where he live? Can you reach him? Can you contact him? Where he come from? What's his degree? What's his education? Yeah. And the people will look at you, even though the salam said, man, weary of who you take your religion from. And I can remember the Salaf who said this. He said, name your man and I'ma name my man. But we live in a day and age where don't nobody ask who are your man. And we look at that as disrespectful.
Right.
Your doctor, when you go to your hospital, you go see your primary practitioner, your doctor, his degrees is on the wall. You can see his verification. If you ask him, he will tell you gladly. He take pride in his accomplishment. Now, if you ask about a person and you ask them, yeah, hey, do you have this? Do you have that? What have you studied? Don't nobody know what nobody has studied. And sometimes you'll get, oh, I studied this chapter and that chapter. And then they'll use these words. And I'm always, I find it funny when the person just be talking in English and they just bust out with an Arabic catchphrase. Yeah, Kether, what Kether? Oh, wait, what? Oh, no. But hold on, side note. I'm about to digress viciously. Remember, what was they called? The Dean Boys or the Halal Boys, where they had the little skit on Instagram where the brother walked up to him and said, Salam alaikum. And the brother had the vicious throw more than the kufi. And me and you have seen this time and time again. And you know, I be laughing brothers out. When the brother come to the spot and be like, you be like, man, Salam alaikum, huh? He'd be like, wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. And you'd be like, oh, mashallah, man. He'd be, and the brother in the joint was like, nah, that's all I know. I don't speak Arabic.
Yeah.
But we don't do our examinations. We aren't keen, man. We distance from Allah, man. Allah has put us in a vulnerable position, man, where we not even safeguarding our own deen from these ideological attacks. We're open and we're exposed. And remember Sheikh Al-Albani put together that small treaty, Tasfiya wa Tarbiyah, and I can't remember the hadith, but all I remember is at the end, he said, until you return back to your deen.
The hadith is, to paraphrase it, when you take hold of the tails, the buckle of the cows, and you concern yourself with agriculture and you leave off jihad, then Allah will place a humiliation upon you and he won't lift it until you return back to your religion.
How is this not applicable? The Prophet, the Salafi Salih, all the way down to this day and age, has warned us time and time and time and time and time again. And we have been heedless. So now we're knee deep in it, so deep that we have become numb to it. We don't even know we in trouble now because we partying. We having a good time. We going to these lectures with these creased up thobes and the crease and the gaiters on. And we out that joint. We really on some menhads macking. We trying to catch. Ain't nobody going in there with no book and no pen. And soon as a person come out of there, you ask them what was they talking about. They can't even answer.
You right?
This is the Muslims used to be. You've been around long enough in the 80s and the 90s and going further back, the Muslim was the most respected person in this country. Even if they did not like Islam, they respected your integrity, they respected your honor, they respected the women, they looked at the men as pillars of the community. I'm going to tell you, when I knew things was going south, was the first time when I heard somebody actually call a Muslim a liar.
Yeah.
When I was like, whoa, that's a deep statement, because prior to that moment, and I think that was in the 2000s, I never heard a person, you know, a person might be like, I don't know, man, I never heard up until these past two decades of Islam, past probably decade and a half, 10 years, I'll probably say 10 or 15 years, where a person outright said when the man had the kufi in the bed and the miswax hanging out of his mouth, where a weak kafir just looked him dead in the eye and said, Ak, you lying, you lying. So, man, Allah, that's an honor. When Umar ibn al-Khattara, radiallahu anhu, he said, man, Allah has honored us and given us izzah by way of Islam. And whoever seeks honor or integrity from anything other than Islam, he will be humiliated. And right now, we are humiliated, disenfranchised, shamble of a community of people who's just only concerned with the froth, the surface level of Salafia.
And that last statement that you brought by Umar, radiallahu anhu, you can write that in platinum every day, because that's actually the state where the people are seeking honor and things other than Islam. Not only like their worldly means, right? Because, for example, you can have a kufar or something who's good in agriculture, and you might have to go to the kufar to learn about agriculture, right? But what you have, you don't have that. You have the Muslims looking at the kufar as the standard, right? You have them looking at the kufar as the standard. So much so that, for example, if you had something by the kufar that clearly promotes shirk, you will still run headlong to it. Because you look at them so much as the standard that if they're doing it, they have to be right.
But even worse than that, sit down and try to have wordplay. Like, I don't know about you, but one thing I despise is when a person try to run game on me when I know it's game being ran. That's an insult to my intelligence. I just be like, you really must think I'm stupid. You really?
Yo, I had a brother tell me that America, a Muslim from Yemen, tell me that America was the land of Baraka. I'm looking at him like, what do you mean? Like, man, this is the land of Baraka. They got running water. They got electricity. They got, like, man, what are you, a fool? Why did they even fix your mouth to articulate the words to even say that? When you have one city, that's called Sin City. And so how in the world could you even fathom the idea that this is a land of Baraka? And like you pointed out, man, this is where we are now. The people are top surface. And so they t- take the Kufar as the standard, and they chase after this dunya according to them. This dunya wasn't made haram for us. It's not haram to be rich and to seek out your means to do it. That's not haram. But you would do it at expense of your religion. And you would do it at expense of your religion.
Yeah.
And so, like you pointed out, that until the people return back to Allah on a small scale and on a grand scale, then you already know what to expect. And the best thing that a person can do right now, especially from my vantage point, man, is to make sure that himself and his family is nurtured well, man. Because as Allah says in the Quran, save yourself and your families from a fire used fuelless men and stones. Everyone is walking around with shaitan, right? Because of all of the bad that's connected with social media and the internet, period. And being that everybody has a phone and at least 8 to 12 hours a day, your face is glued to it, and so you're susceptible to all types of influences. And if you don't have a strong foundation, then you're subject to be like a feather in the wind. You're going to blow in whichever direction that the wind is going. And a lot of times, and it may not be that it happens all at once, right? And I'm going to just give an example of how influence works. So you have one sister who's popular, and I'm just using the sister as an example. It's not a precious sister session. But you have one sister, for example, who's popular on social media. And so she does live while she's staging her house, right?
Mm-hmm. And
next thing you know, another sister. I got my sage, hashtag sage the house, right? And so the hashtag grows. And now you have all of these sisters thinking they're bringing quote-unquote good vibes into their house by burning this sage. So the question was never asked to yourself or amongst the group. If you're burning this sage to bring good vibes in the house, who is it that's actually bringing the good vibes? Right? That's a critical question, because you want some good vibes in your house, right? You're going to seek this from other than Allah? You think this bundle of sage that you're burning and you're waving it around your house, it's actually going to bring higher and better God in your house? Right? But you've seen the sister doing it, and the sister's popular, and she's doing it, and she wears gloves, and she wears niqab, and oh, she got to be so knowledgeable. But she can't be, because she's burning this sage.
Mm-hmm.
She just made you a proponent of shit.
Yeah.
Just that easy and simple, right? And so if we don't sit back, like you say, as a community, and start nurturing our people. And like you pointed out, that like that lecture that Omar Quinn has, is your husband your best friend? Ooh. And just for the sake of this show, I'm going to say, is your husband your favorite da'i? Right? Because if he's not going out, learning Islam, bringing Islam back to you, teaching it to you, and you're teaching it to your children, then your kids are going to be susceptible. Because right now, what we need going forth is a generation of Muslims, men and women, that are strong upon the foundations, that's firm upon Islam, who has a love for Islam, who has a love for Islamic identity. And we need that, right? The structure of Islam is going to continue to be just as the Messenger of Allah, alayhi salatu wasalam, he mentioned, to paraphrase the hadith about where he says that nations are going to come upon you and feast upon you, just like people feast upon a platter. And when they ask, will we be few? He says, no, you will be you know, large in number, but you'll be like the froth from the sea. You won't have any substance to you, right? And this is the state where we are now.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you something. Our generation, the times that we live in, we might be the most distant people from Allah that could still have the valid claim of saying that we Muslim. We are the most distant from Allah within the realms of Islam, where a lot of our Islam, and I don't exclude any, not especially not myself, that a lot of us might be walking around with expired Shahada cards, man. We might got an expired license to practice Islam. Real talk, man. If a person come into an issue, they'll go to Google, they'll go to Siri, they'll ask so-and-so. How many people say, I'm taking this job, but let me even see if this type of job is permissible. Let me research this. How many people of us really research our day-to-day life according to the Quran and the Sunnah? How many of us even invest in our education and really have a nice amount of resource book to get us through the day-by-day issues? I'm not talking about going all into the esoteric of whatever. Rookie, you don't even have your shahada, or you don't even know if you are practicing or if you are offering your salat correctly. I'm talking about just the basic day-by-day stuff that can either bring you closer to Allah or take or move you further. And that's not a burden that can simply just be thrown on a man. Women have to do their most due diligence. They should have the same love for Islam as we do. If I got 1,000 books, at least have 20. Don't say that you've been Muslim for 20 years and all you have is the Sirah of the Prophet, Yusuf Ali Quran, and a weird thicker book, one of the big floppy joints that don't really fit on your bookshelf, and it don't have where these thickers come from. You get what I'm saying? No, I'm like, for real. A lot of times, man, we be married to, and we be seeking marriage from ghosts. They just be having the cobs and gloves on. I remember my brother Kareem. He was saying that, man, Omar Quinn was having a little sidebar conversation with a group of brothers. And Omar Quinn said, man, sometimes you have to lift these sisters abaya, man, to make sure that their feet touching the ground, meaning that they might be jet.
No.
And sometimes sisters need to do that with the brothers, too. Because we hollow Muslims. We be having all the words. We like the frog. It look deep, and you dive into it, and you bust your head on concrete because it's nothing to sustain you.
Right?
It's empty calorie Muslims, man. We got herbal life Muslim.
Nah, but for real, that statement that Ibn Baz made about women being the whole of the society, right, should be something that women can grab hold of, man, and take like real pride in that, right? I'm talking about real pride in that, because from you or from your household is going to come generations of uprightness. And from those generations, you're solidifying your hereafter, right? Because the examples that you set as a mother, you're not only a mother, but you're also a teacher. You're also an influence to your sons and, more importantly, your daughters, right? And that resonates back to you. Those aren't just empty things that you're doing, right? They have benefits in this life, and they have benefits in the hereafter as well. And so they should cling on to that. Sheikh Muhammad bin Hadi, Habibullah, he has a real short lecture that he did called The Woman is the Queen of Her House.
Yeah.
Right? It's the actual queens. Right? Not just, you're just not a Muslim woman. You're a Muslim woman who's a queen and who has a responsibility. And you shall be weary, weary of who you take your deen from and who you don't even, who even comes into your circumference to bring you this stuff. Because these ideals that we're talking about, we both know that they are foreign to Islam. They have no credence in the Quran or the Sunnah. None whatsoever. The terminology itself should be one that you look at with a raised eyebrow. What in the world is a feminist Muslim? Like, what is it?
A lot of times, and what opens the women lack of proper cultivation, lack of knowledge, and bad experiences dealing with and marriage. Those three will have a woman spiraling, looking for answers. And like I said, we are so distanced from Allah that our dua may not even reach the top of our kufis or kima. I'm being honest, because when we read the stories of the Salaf, and I'm not even talking about the Prophet and the Sahabas or the Tabi'in or the Atba' Tabi'un. I'm talking about just the righteous imams that came. They had stories where people have offered du'as and was like, whoa, was getting, man, blessed. And the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was facilitating their affairs. That was, we don't see these type of things no more, man.
Right.
We don't see that no more. We don't see shining lights and real live goodness coming from our community. We so impoverished that doing bad is rich.
Right.
Doing bad is rich. We don't even know what power, like we so, are we all so miskin that miskin look like richness to us. Oh, I got a white crispy throw of a kufi. I'm going to tilt that joint a little bit. I'm going to lean it back on my head. I got the proch. I got the moose half. I'm going to put some sandals on. And people will, man, swear their mightiest oath to Allah about a person's goodness. We be having people dropped in our community. And man, and the law knows best, but don't nobody know nothing about these people other than so-and-so said bring so-and-so. Like, oh, you got, oh, that's y'all imam now. What's his name? Where he live? Can you reach him? Can you contact him? Where he come from? What's his degree? What's his education? Yeah. And the people will look at you, even though the salam said, man, weary of who you take your religion from. And I can remember the Salaf who said this. He said, name your man and I'm going to name my man. But we live in a day and age where don't nobody ask who are your man. And we look at that as disrespectful.
Right.
Your doctor, when you go to your hospital, you go see your primary practitioner, your doctor, his degrees is on the wall. You can see his verification. If you ask him, he will tell you gladly. He take pride in his accomplishment. Now, if you ask about a person and you ask them, yeah, hey, do you have this? Do you have that? What have you studied? Don't nobody know what nobody has studied. And sometimes you'll get, I studied this chapter and that chapter. And then they'll use these words. And I'm always, I find it funny when the person just be talking in English and they just bust out with an Arabic catchphrase. Yeah, Kether, what Kether? Oh, wait, what? Oh, no. But hold on, side note. I'm about to digress viciously. Remember, what was they called? The Dean Boys or the Halal Boys, where they had the little skit on Instagram where the brother walked up to him and said, Salaam alaikum. And the brother had the vicious throw more than the kufi. And me and you have seen this time and time again. And you know, I be laughing brothers out. when the brother come on, come to the spot and be like, you be like, man, assalamu alaikum. Huh? He be like, wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. And you be like, oh, mashallah, man. And the brother in the joint was like, nah, that's all I know. I don't speak Arabic.
Yeah.
But no, but we don't do our examinations. We aren't keen, man. We distance from Allah, man. Allah has put us in a vulnerable position, man, where we not even safeguarding our own deen from these ideological attacks. We're open and we're exposed. And remember Sheikh Al-Albani put together that small treaty, Tasfiyah with Tarbiyah, and I can't remember the hadith, but all I remember is at the end, he said, until you return back to your deen.
The hadith is, to paraphrase it, when you take hold of the tails, the buckle of the cows, and you concern yourself with agriculture and you leave off jihad, then Allah will place a humiliation upon you, and he won't lift it until you return back to your religion.
How is this not applicable? The prophet, the Salafi Salih, all the way down to this day and age has warned us time and time and time and time and time again, and we have been heedless. So now we're knee deep in it, so deep that we have become numb to it. We don't even know we in trouble now because we partying, we having a good time. We going to these lectures with these creased up thobes and the crease and the gaiters on, and we out that joint. We really on some menhaj macking. We trying to catch. Ain't nobody going in there with no book and no pen. And soon as a person come out of there, you ask them what was they talking about. They can't even answer.
You right?
This is the Muslims used to be. You've been around long enough in the 80s and the 90s and going further back, the Muslim was the most respected person in this country. Even if they did not like Islam, they respected your integrity, they respected your honor, they respected the women, they looked at the men as pillars of the community. I'm going to tell you, when I knew things was going south, was the first time when I heard somebody actually call a Muslim a liar.
Yeah.
When I was like, whoa, that's a deep statement, because prior to that moment, and I think that was in the 2000s, I never heard a person, you know, a person might be like, I don't know, man, I never heard up until these past two decades of Islam, past probably decade and a half, 10 years, I'll probably say 10 or 15 years, where a person outright said when the man had the kufi in the bed and the miswax hanging out of his mouth, where a weak kafir just looked him dead in the eye and said, oh, you lying, you lying. So, man, Allah, that's an honor. When Umar ibn al-Khattara, radiallahu anh, he said, man, Allah has honored us and given us izzah by way of Islam. And whoever seeks honor or integrity from anything other than Islam, he will be humiliated. And right now, we are humiliated, disenfranchised, shamble of a community of people who's just only concerned with the froth, the surface level of Salafia.
And that last statement that you brought by Umar, radiallahu anh, you can write that in platinum every day, because that's actually the state where the people are seeking honor and things other than Islam. Not only like their worldly means, right? Because, for example, you can have a kufar or something who's good in agriculture, and you might have to go to the kufar to learn about agriculture, right? But what you have, you don't have that. You have the Muslims looking at the kufar as the standard, right? You have them looking at the kuffar as the standard. So much so that, for example, if you had something by the kuffar that clearly promotes shirk, you will still run headlong to it. Because you look at them so much as the standard that if they're doing it, they have to be right.
But even worse than that, sit down and try to have wordplay. Like I don't know about you, but one thing I despise is when a person try to run game on me when I know it's game being ran. That's an insult to my intelligence. I just be like, you really must think I'm stupid. You really?
Yo, I had a brother tell me that America, a Muslim from Yemen, tell me that America was the land of Baraka. And I'm looking at him like, what do you mean? Like, man, this is the land of Baraka. They got running water. They got electricity. They got, like, man, what are you, a fool? Why did they even fix your mouth to articulate the words to even say that? When you have one city, that's called Sin City. And so how in the world could you even fathom the idea that this is a land of battle? And like you pointed out, man, this is where we are now. The people are top surface. And so they take the kuffar as the standard and they chase after this dunya, according to them. This dunya wasn't made haram for us. It's not haram to be rich and to seek out your means to do it. That's not haram. But you will do it at expense of your religion. And you will do it at expense of your religion.
Yeah.
And so, like you pointed out, that until the people return back to Allah on a small scale and on a grand scale, then you already know what to expect. And the best thing that a person can do right now, especially from my vantage point, man, is to make sure that himself and his family is nurtured well, man. Because as Allah says in the Quran, save yourself and your families from a fire used fuel as men and stone. Right? And so that's really the crux of fixing things, man, is that me as an individual, I have to safeguard myself, and then I have to spread that to my family and be content with that. And then that person beside me has to take that same type of motto.
Right. And the Lord subhanahu wa ta'ala will bring you all together.
Listen, man, it's just like I pointed out, man, and we've kind of got off subject, but in reality, it's all related because that ideological attack isn't just on the women. It's on the Muslims in their whole.
Yeah.
Like he pointed out earlier, there's no way that one of the masajid is flourishing or those masajid that are in connection with it are flourishing. And then the masjid that is around the corner from you that ascribes to the same thing and calls to the same thing that you are, and you're not being as diligent as helping them out as you saw aid from others to furnish your masjid and the upkeep of your masjid, right?
Hold on, now. Let me add something to that, because I got into it. It was like for a year I got in back and forth with a brother concerning that, and eventually I had to unfollow him because I was like, how is it that you have this masjid in your city that's also ascribes to the Dawah to Salafiyah, Ruth came in there, and y'all are doing fundraisers in your city to help renovate the masjid in my city, which is 200, 300 miles away, but the masjid in your city that's nothing but across town have a roof cave in there and the women can't, and y'all not doing nothing for them? That's like me. That's like my bathroom is completely caved in, but I'm sitting down. I run all the way across town to repair someone else's bathroom.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And the reason why I even bring this up, because we have to be unified on all fronts. That hadith has become, it's been used so much that it's almost become like it comes to catchphrase. Whomever loves Allah in the last day, let him want for his brother what he wants for himself. Right? We've heard this hadith so much that it doesn't even have an effect on the people. Right? Because like you pointed out, man, if the masjid or the masajid are the lifeline of the Muslim, right? Then how is it that you can go to sleep at night knowing that's the condition of the house of Allah?
Yeah, it's a whole...
And listen, I was in Ahl al-Hadith. I went to a conference 1 year in Philly. And when we came into Philly, it was time for Juma. So the brother who was driving, that's, you know, he was from Philly and he knew Philly well. And so he took us to Ahl Hadith. And so we go in there and we pray and we attend the Juma. And after the Juma, the brother, he said that we're going to put off our classes for a week. And we are encouraging brothers to go over to Germantown and to benefit from the conference there. Mm-hmm. Right? We know the history with them brothers. But yet and still, they're still promoting them. They're still telling the people to go and to benefit from them. But on the opposite end, when they do their yearly conference, do you see Germantown promoting it? Do you see those people who attend Germantown promoting it? No. So how do you expect that Allah is going to bless us when you don't care for your brother the same way that he cares for you? This ain't like no back and forth bashing who's better or nothing. This is reality, y'all. That's the reality of the situation, right?
Yeah.
Because you're saying we're not going to promote them. We're not going to come to your defense. And like when I pointed out, when the man wrote that vicious article against them brothers, you didn't see the people come out. When the brother got his name wrong on a cup of Starbucks, they made a whole fiasco about this stuff. Getting those people involved and everything because someone wrote ISIS on his cup. Did they poison you? Did they put some in your drink? You drank it and you enjoyed it, and then later on that day you found this stuff, man. No harm came to you. But you got news people involved in all of this stuff, and then you have the Muslims over here being slandered, being accused of being in these terrorist groups and promoting these people who's causing all this corruption and chaos in the town, and then you don't come to their aid for this. You don't.
Yeah.
And so, like I pointed out, man, this is a plot, man, that has a bigger ramification than just, you know, some petty bickering that two brothers may have had that could have been squashed a long time ago, right? And I ain't calling nobody nothing, man. I'm just saying you cannot sit back and that there isn't outside entities that's help perpetuate this stuff, man.
Hey, it's similar to the statement that Omar said, something to the effect of, it was a time where we used to know the people by way of revelation. But verily, the messenger, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, has died and the revelation has ceased. So now we judge people according to their actions, what they show us.
No.
Whatever is in the person's heart, that's between them and Allah. So I would be foolish to see actions showing one thing, a string of actions, a collection, a case file of actions, and to think otherwise. Now, I can't say anything in any definite term, but we see the madness that's going on. We see it, we experience it, and what's even worse is it's spread to the lay people where the person can't even perform salat correctly. How are you giving me a point-by-point refutation? That's all people know. Oh, this person can recite the whole everything that a person did and what the way you go at to find it. But you don't even know the first opening line of the Lathul Usul.
Right.
You have no concept of the basics about anything. I can't come to you and have you off the top of your head. And I'm not even talking about what proofs and evidences and a spit line for line verbatim. But just give me a summation of what you studied. You can't get that from hardly anybody, but they could tell you, oh, I don't listen to so-and-so. Why not? Because so-and-so said so. What did a scholar say? What do you mean? Like, wait, man, hold on now. First of all, it should be clear as day when the scholars have said that the student of knowledge should not be refuting anyone.
Right.
And Sheikh Mukbil, rahimahullah, he put out one of the most critical statements that checked anybody who feel like they don't know their place. He said, after the student of knowledge has graduated university, he is just now able to sit with a scholar. That's the only thing that degree meant to him. He said, okay, you graduated. You're just now qualified. Now you know just enough to sit with a scholar, but by the way, you really know little. How many hadiths has anyone memorized? Is anybody Hafiz of Quran? Can anybody verbatim go over any of the works, major or minor, from the top of their head? Can they give a lecture without a notebook or without reading from a book line for line?
No.
But you refuting. You giving yourself over the refutation where you have the knowledge. The Sheikh said, I can't even talk to you. You don't even know Arabic. What is you saying? I don't understand what you're saying. You need to go back and study the language. That's a hefty statement, but this is the stuff that we're all caught up in. We're following people who still should be following people. These scholars was great when they became scholars, or they was cultivated in such a way that Allah blessed them that they had the whole moose half before they was 13, 14, 10, 9. You read the story from the scholars, from the ulama, and they memorized this by 18, 19. They had al-Bukhari, or they were studying al-Bukhari. Not Riyadu Salihin, not Balugh al-Maram. They was going straight to the big boy because they came from a scholarly household and background.
Right.
Whereas though we are the froth from the sea. We're taking from people who have to read, who have to go verbatim, line for line, and making mistakes along the way, passing these fatwas and speaking out of turn. Where many of the ulama say, even if you think you're correct, matter of fact, take Mukbil, rahimahullah, rahimahullah, rahimahullah. He said, even if you think you're correct, still take it to a scholar first.
Right.
Don't jump out there. Because when you jump out there, you out there. You did not see a lot of this stuff when Sheikh Mukbil was around, when Sheikh Al-Albani was around, when Sheikh Bass was around, when Sheikh Uthaymeen was around. And so, and what your man say, Kether, what Kether? You didn't see this. Because they wasn't playing. We was more attached to these scholars by way of their books than we are to that. And we hear these students of knowledge keep saying, no, our job is to connect you to the scholar. Who has Sheikh Rabir number? Who can get on the line and call a scholar? How are we connected?
Yeah, they're not going to give it to you either. If you ask support, what they're going to do is ask you what you want. Yo, let me give the Sheikh number. What do you want?
And a lot of times, man, they don't even be have. They be having a number to a number to a number to a number. That's why we can never hear recordings. You know, with Scott, if you come to them with somebody, Sheikh, do you mind if we record this? You know, yeah. Who's connected line, record it and spread the word. We don't know. Recorded a statement. We get a we spoke to the Sheikh and da. But we connected to the scholars. People say I'm riding with Sheikh Rabir. I ride with Sheikh Rabir, and I always ask this: name me five works that Sheikh Rabir has authored. Nobody knows nothing about Sheikh Rabir, who always pumped their chest.
Yeah,
with froth. We once we get behind the bluster and the blunder. And the rolling, the raw, and the and all that type of stuff, it won't be nothing. You take the kufi off, man, the joke, a whole light bulb might come with it. It might not be nothing in that joint. It might be some candy corn. Hey, I'm being 100% serious, man. You know, I'm not, one thing about me, you never hear me say I'm learned, even amongst the smallest of the smallest people. I don't know nothing, but I know when another person don't know something because I know how to ask key questions, you know, and just, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's, wow, really? Really? Well, tell me, who's Sheikh Rabir? Who was his teachers? Who was his students?
What? You ain't going to get that, man.
Yeah. But,
you know, just to go back, to our, you know, our original point, man, is that we have to just basically, you know, cultivate our family, not only our women, of this man, because these things are out there, man. And amongst the things that we're mentioning are some of the effects of these attacks, man. And so we have to really, really, really be aware of the plot of the Shaitan and his helpers, man. Because as I just said, man, you have to think that, man. You have to sit back and say, okay, the Sheikh, he said, you know, squash this, put your hands together, y'all brothers. Then where's the Islam, right? It has, something had to happen within there to stop that. But also, once we know this, man, we have to do the work, man. And sometimes, man, we just have to step away from the fray of what's going on with this group or that group and do what it is that needs to be done individually. Because, you know, when the smoke clears, man, we're going to be the ones individually, you and I, right, that's going to be held account for what we put forth.
Nah.
And our love for Islam can't be as a result of someone else's, right? We have to have this love for this deen and its preservation to the best of our ability. And so that's why it's important that we have these conversations on that layman level, right? Once we have the conversation on this layman level, like, hey, man, there's something fishy going on. I've seen a whole lot of this whole lot of this feminist stuff coming over here. I've seen a whole lot of this Tukfiri stuff going on over there. There's something going on, right? And we take these back to the proper authorities, meaning the scholars. And then we get their understandings and judgments on how to fix these things. Because listen, just like that book you mentioned by Sheikh Al-Albani, this book was written because it wasn't even a book, it was an actual lecture, right? The people from Libya called the Sheikh and asked him some questions, right? Mm-hmm. And he's explaining to them how to get victory, right? You want victory from Allah, then this is how you get it. And he mentioned, like, how do you expect victory from Allah when you have within your ranks the Rafida? The same people are in your ranks while you're making dua to Allah alone. They're calling upon Hussein and Hassan and all of these other dead men to bring them victory. So if you got this within your rank, how is it that you expect victory? And so on that grand scale, but my point of mentioning this is, had they listened to the Sheikh, right? Because he told them, don't try to fight these people. You don't have the artillery. You don't have the manpower. You don't have the force to even win. So don't even approach it, right? Rather, rectify your affairs by correcting your aqidah, right? And once you do that, then Allah will give you victory. And so this is where we're at, right? So we have these conversations on these levels. We return back to the ulama. We take their dictates and we work on them, right? Try to put them into fruition. Because not everybody is going to get on the train. Just as them people didn't listen to Albani then, the people didn't listen to Rabia now, right? And as a result of them not listening to their beloved Sheikh, you still have confusion amongst the Salafis, right? So much so that when someone did speak against them, it created even more. Because now it's like you was opposing the Sheikh, when in reality, you were aiding the Sheikh. Mm-hmm. So this is what we have to do, man. On these micro levels, man, I have to do the work in my household first. You got to do the work in your household first. Fulay has to do the work in his household first, right? And if we start to do this, then our communities will start to receive that barakah that we so much think that we are receiving. And you, as the saying goes, you know the tree by its fruit. And as much as the people like to boast and brag about their prospective parties, we see the fruits, right? And so what we understand from that is I need to get away from that tree because that tree is not bearing fruit that's ripe enough to eat. Because everywhere I look at, I don't see the fights against these foreign entities coming in. You got this woman, and this should be a major thing. You shouldn't just write this woman off as some foreign and strange woman that started an all-women masjid with all-women imams, right? Mm. And they're not just saying only women come to these masjids. They're saying the Muslims come to this masjid, right? They're asking for the Muslims to come to this masjid, but they want the women to lead these masajid. They want to reinterpret the Quran. Right? This is what's going on. And then here on the ground level, I'm worried about taking from Fulan. Don't take from Fulan. And I'm not saying that's not important, because if Fulan is putting out Basu, then that Basu needs to be batted down. But what I'm saying is that there is a large scale attack, right? Where they have the Muslims divided, and at the same time, they're pumping in the gas. Right? They're pumping in all these poison ideas. They telling your children to run off. I'm telling you to go to Syria and I ain't there. What kind of stuff does that mean? I'm not ducked down behind a wall with my AK shooting at the enemy, saying we need help, come and help us. I'm telling you from the comfort of my own living room to go over there. Oh, man, this is what's going on. He telling women to take off their hijab. That's what's going on. And one who is doing it, he doesn't have a lihya. He doesn't wear a thobe. His name is Ahmed. His name is John White. He's sitting in the office in the CIA or somewhere. Getting your kids to believe these goofy things? This Ilhan Omar woman standing shoulder to shoulder, all under the guise of I'm a Muslim. I represent Islam. Homosexual is fine. This was going on. And this is what we have to be aware of, man. If we don't sit back and look at the plots and the plans of the shaitan, man, then don't be surprised when you wake up in the back of a van or something, man.
I'm going to tell you
trash something. Bag on your head.
I'm going to tell you something. You know what we need? We need to return back to a place where we fell in love with the law. Where we fell in love with the religion. Where the religion wasn't just duty and obligation, but it was felicity and happiness. That place where when we learned the new ayah, a new surah, and we experienced joy and we wanted to recite it. Or that place where when we first learned the haruf, where we knew the aleph from the ba, from the ta, from the that. We need to get back to what made us become Muslim in the first place. Where we seen the beauty of Islam and we seen the beauty and the structure and the order that Islam gave us, that purpose. We lost that. We fell out of love with Islam and the law, man. We really had. And right now we're just like just two people just going through day by day life with no emotions. We don't love Allah the way that he should be loved. And even more importantly, we need to return to that place where Allah loved us. Where Allah really loved us and blessed us and inspired us and made us want to be better. Man, we are in a very sad and lonely state and we're grasping at straws. And because we don't have that love, we're looking forward in all the wrong places through these false ideologies. If the Muslim woman loved Allah, really was in love with Allah, then she wouldn't want no other way of life. I don't care what she goes through, how many marriages she's been through. She believes in the goodness and the beauty of Islam. Nah. So she's doing everything, man, for the love of Allah because she loved being Muslim. She loved covering. She loved learning new things about the religion. She loved implementing a new sunnah. She loved waking up at night. And not just for the sisters, but for the brothers. Because right now, it's almost like autopilot Islam.
Yeah.
You know, we just kind of going through the motions. We go to the lectures because we goes to or because my man's and them are going to be there. We're not going there understanding that the angels is going to be gathered there. We're not going there really consciously and in our heart believing that Allah is witnessing this and we're doing this as an act of ibadah. We don't get married because it's an act of ibadah. Because even more so than getting a woman, we earning the pleasure of Allah. That's what all of this is about. Al-Wallah wal-Barah is solely centered around Allah. And then Allah tells us who else we are, you know. Because what did the prophet say? He said, man, if you truly love Allah, then follow me. Then Allah will love you. But if you love Allah, not if you love me, not if you love Islam, not if you love, if you love the law, if you love Allah, then follow me. Because Allah, based on your love of Allah, and part of love is obedience and submission, then Allah said, follow the messenger. That's why we follow Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because Allah commanded us, because our hearts is attached to Allah. That's why when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam died, Abu Bakr looked at the people mourning and we said, man, if you worship Muhammad then verily his dad. If you worship Allah, then he is all living, self-sustaining. All of this is for Allah with Jannah in mind. The rest of this is just Muslim trinkets. Allah out of his mercy has granted us to make living with our wife beautiful. If Allah wanted to, Allah didn't have to make sex be pleasurable. Now let's see y'all two just wallow around in each other fluids. Not enjoying it, not getting up. All of that is Allah said he gave you a mate to be a comfort for you. I made the earth pliable for you. Worship me. Don't worship the earth. Don't worship food land. Don't worship food land. Don't worship this thing or that thing. Worship me and love me. And man, this thing could be laid out for you, but you're going to go through some hardship, and I'm going to try and I'm going to test your love. I'm going to try and I'm going to test the truthfulness of your statement of la ilaha illallah. I'm going to test you, but here's the cheat code. Not only am I going to test you, but I'm going to give you the answers. All you got to do is pencil in A, B, C, and D, or D.
Yeah, and listen, that's what throws me, man, is that you actually have the answers. And it's been made easy, man. Like you said, it's basically a cheat code, man. But inshallah, we'll leave this conversation here. So we recently got off into the Coffee and Benefit merch game. We got them Coffee and Benefit sweaters and t-shirts. Inshallah, the hats will be coming soon. And so you can go to the Coffee and Benefit Instagram page or the Coffee and Benefits Twitter page and look at the few items that we have posted there. Our beloved brother Redbeard is our number one model for Coffee and Benefit.
Don't do that out.
Yeah. And so inshallah, we'll have that available soon. All colors, all sizes. And inshallah, we possibly will have something specifically for the sisters as well. So look out for the Coffee Benefits merchandise. Also, we're going to have mugs too, because we can't do Coffee and Benefits any kind of merchandise without having mugs, right? Because we live in that coffee life. So look out for that as well. So again, follow us on Twitter at Coffee and Benefits, also on Instagram at Coffee and Benefits. And now, it's been a beautiful conversation. I hope that there are plenty of more, and I hope that those who listen gain some benefit from this as well. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.